This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The political world is generally perceived as being divided into good democracies and bad authoritarian regimes. In China's case, there is no doubt that its political system has a dictatorial nature. But what if their ruling system is better than that of many other countries practicing electoral democracy? Daniel A. Bell is a professor at Tsinghua University in political science. In his book, The China Model, he challenges the conventional idea about China's political meritocracy.
Basically, over the past 30 years, there's been the reestablishment of a political system for the selection and promotion of leaders in China that's similar in form to what you had in Imperial China. Basically, public officials are selected first by means of examinations and then promoted on the basis of performance at lower levels of government. Now, in terms of the content of examinations and what counts as good performance, of course, that's new and modernized. But the form of the system is basically similar to what you had in Imperial China. One difference now, of course, is that it also has more modern democratic characteristics, such as electoral democracy at lower levels of government, a certain degree of concern for public opinion, as well as experimentation with new modes of governance in between lower and higher levels of government. So what I'm saying is that there's been this ideal of political reform, which I call political meritocracy, with democracy at lower levels of government and experimentation in between. And that has inspired political reform over the past 30 years. But there's still a big gap between the reality and the ideal. So my book is not a defense of the status quo. I'm saying that we need to understand the political system. We need to understand this reestablishment of political meritocracy. And in terms of critical evaluation, my own view is that what should count as a standard of progress and regress is precisely this ideal of political meritocracy with democracy at lower levels of government.
Bell says it is unfair to generalize China as an autocratic regime, claiming fundamental truths about its governance must be understood.
I guess we're influenced by the Western political discourse, whether it's in academia or in the media, that tends to divide the political world into kind of good democracies where leaders are chosen by means of competitive elections at all levels of government, and authoritarian or autocratic regimes, which basically is the rest. So any regime or any political system where the leaders at the top are not chosen by means of one person, one vote, is lumped into that category. So we have systems like North Korea, like China, like Egypt, and so on, they're all lumped within this category. But I think it's not a very helpful way of understanding the Chinese political system. The differences between North Korea and China, you know, far outweigh the similarities. Of course, the political system has authoritarian characteristics. We all know the way that China deals with political dissidents, and there's heavy censorship and so on. But there's also democratic characteristics, you know, electoral democracy at local levels. Again, imperfect, but it's there at a certain extent, and much more freedom, arguably, than in any other time in Chinese history. If we really want to understand the core of the political system, we really have to understand this political meritocracy, how it is. The whole political system is designed with the aim of selecting and promoting leaders with above average qualities, above average intelligence, social skills, and virtue.
What about the public's perception in China on the ruling system? And what is the advantage of this political structure?
In terms of level of satisfaction, I mean, according to political surveys in China, there is relatively high level of political satisfaction. And the surveys have been conducted to try to weed out biases. And it's a pretty consistent finding, actually, that people in China are quite dissatisfied with lower levels of government. But the higher up you go up the chain of political command, the higher the level of satisfaction becomes. You know, and let's not forget that for all of China's problems, it has achieved the greatest miracle in human history in terms of poverty reduction. So it's not surprising that there is that level of support. But of course, in the future, things will have to change. And part of that change involves allowing more voices to the people, more freedom of speech, But what I argue is that the political reform should stop at the point that there's one person, one vote for top leaders, because that would wreck what is advantageous about the political meritocratic system, namely that political leaders have this decades-long training, that they don't make beginners' mistakes, and that they could carry out long-term policies without worrying about being thrown out of power in the next election, and they don't have to waste so much time campaigning and giving the same speech over and over and over again and raising money instead of focusing on policy making. So the system does have advantages.
Bell argues that Beijing's ongoing anti-corruption campaign may come across as political repression.
There's been a tightening of the political environment, and I think that's tied to the anti-corruption campaign, which is really tied to the meritocratic system, because in a meritocracy, the leaders have their legitimacy, at least partly, by being viewed as having superior virtue. And if they're corrupt, it means that they're not serving the public goods, and it undermines not just the legitimacy of the current leaders, but the whole meritocratic system. In a democracy, you know, corruption is bad, but it's not fatal, because if the leaders are corrupt, you just vote them out of power. And if the next set of leaders are still corrupt, again, you vote them out of power. If the leaders are still corrupt, well, then problem to a certain extent with the people, not with the democratic system. But in a meritocracy, corruption is a stake in the heart of the system. So in order to preserve what works about the system, they really do have to do measures to engage, just to reduce corruption. And that's why we have now the longest and most systematic anti-corruption campaign in Chinese history. But meanwhile, there are so many enemies that are being created because of this anti-corruption campaign. For every one person in prison on corruption charges, there's like 100 behind them. So that the leaders are, you know, with just cause, arguably, quite paranoid because there's so many enemies who against them. And that explains the kind of current tight environment, I think, more than anything. That said, you know, if the anti-corruption campaign succeeds in the next few years, then there's much more room, and I think it would be very important to relax and to have a much more open society. So in the long term, I do think that the long-term trend is towards a more open political system, short of one person, one vote to choose top leaders. But I'm not very optimistic about the current situation in terms of openness because of this anti-corruption campaign and the amount of enemies that it produces.
Bell insists there are many attributes of democracy and competence in China's political system, which are often overlooked.
Remember, it's a decades-long process, and there's performance evaluation at different levels of government. And of course, to a certain extent, it helps to have good relations with powerful patrons. But those who get through the system, if they don't have good performance, they would get knocked off. I mean, it's ultra competitive. So it's certainly not sufficient to rely on patronage or, let's just say, Machiavellian, you know, politicking to get to the top. There's plenty of room for improvement of the way in which leaders are promoted, especially. And one of the things in the past, you know, between 2002 and 2012, there was heavy reliance on examinations in the promotion process. But now they realize that you can have many exam smart people, but that might be problematic from a virtue point of view, i.e. they might be very corrupt. So now there's more character in the selection process. Now, how do you test for that? Well, it turns out that in the past, it was meant relying more on the views of superiors. But superiors don't necessarily have a good insight into the moral character of candidates. In fact, it's the peers, people at similar level of government with whom the candidates interact with on an everyday basis that have much better insight into the moral character of candidates. So in order to reduce corruption in the whole process of promotion, there's a need for greater reliance on peer review. Again, you know, people say, oh, what about the top leaders? Some of them are because they're from political families. I mean, that's partly true, but again, that's not sufficient. You know, people like Xi Jinping, they were put on the kind of leadership track in the 1980s, not just because of their family backgrounds, but because of their reformist leanings. And again, the family background doesn't guarantee that they would get through the system. Now, the examination system has been put in place since the early 1990s, and if you don't do well at exams, forget about it. You basically have no shot on being put on the promotion track for top leadership.
That was Daniel A. Bell, a professor at Tsinghua University in political science. I'm Keith Kam, reporting for BFM.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.